Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 88-year-old Mike DeCesar of Madera, California. We've heard a lot already that tugs at the heartstrings, but we haven't heard about the war patrols he participated in as a 17-year-old aboard the World War II submarine USS Sennett.
I finished sub-school, and then by NATS, Naval Air Transport Service, they flew us out here to California. From California, flew us to Hawaii. Then I was assigned to the Sennett, which is a 408 boat. We are actually operated in the Pacific. A lot of people would say, were you dip charged? Were you this? Were you that? You know, how many torpedoes did you fire? Well, I never fired any. I was electrician's mate, you know. But there was some action. Sennett had a good battle record. You keep busy. You're really busy. I mean, you have an assignment to do, and you got to do that assignment. You don't worry about these other things, you know. What's going to happen is going to happen. You accept that fact. It's just like if you're a paratrooper. You know, you jump. Is the thing going to open or is it not?
Right.
You do it.
And we've heard a lot of veterans say that, hey, I just had to do what I was told, what my assignments were. So what were your duties aboard that submarine?
Well, of course, the submarines, you know, the old diesel electric and the control panels and everything. Once you submerge, you're on batteries. Mm-hmm. So you're operating electric. When you surface, you're on diesel engines.
And it's kind of an all or nothing proposition, isn't it, being on a submarine? I mean, I've seen the numbers of the 52 subs lost during World War II, and that a greater percentage of the submarine force was lost than any other segment of the military in World War II. You say you never had a bad day, but this was a pretty dangerous job you had.
I think just too young or just accept the fact, hey, this is what I chose and this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Something's going to happen. It's up to the Lord, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If it's my time, it's my time. At least if it does happen, I won't be alone. It's just something that fear, it never entered my mind. I knew it was dangerous, but anything was dangerous. I mean, my God, my brother's on a battleship. He's in a forward gun turret and they get hit during the invasion of Normandy. He ends up in a hospital.
Yeah.
And he's on a battleship.
Right. And you've already lost two brothers before you ever got in. So I guess that hits home, that no matter where you were, it was going to be dangerous. What about when you're engaged with the enemy? Did you have a general quarter station?
My general quarter station was by the main control panel.
So you're kind of just sitting there taking it all in?
Yeah, you're listening.
You're listening to the captain?
Well, yeah, you're listening. You got headsets on, you got headphones on, and so forth. And, you know, whether you're in the deck gang or whether you're in the engineering, you've got a job to do. And some guys, all they do is chip paint. Some guys are working on engines. Some guys are working on a mast, fixing the radio antennas. You don't think about those things. I mean, it's hard for some people to understand that, but that's the way it is.
And it takes every one of those people. Yeah.
Yeah. You're submerged. Where are you going to go? You can't go no place. All you can do is pray and say, you know, if it's to be, it's to be, and accept it.
Do you have some examples of moments where that urge or necessity to pray crescendoed for you?
I always pray. I pray regardless.
Good habit to be in.
Yeah.
And as you say that doesn't sound like a superstition for you. You had a real belief that God is looking out for you.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm sure our listeners would be interested in what some of those close calls would be or the exploits of your sub.
I don't know the actual count. I know that we sunk quite a few cargo ships. I believe there was a tanker, but there were quite a few cargo ships.
How does that unfold within the walls of that submarine when you're firing torpedoes and then you find out whether or not they actually struck their target?
Oh, you can hear it when it hits. And you can feel it because the shockwave goes through the water.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, seriously, I mean, don't misunderstand me. I mean, I was raised as a Catholic. I'm a fourth degree member of the Knights of Columbus. I believe in Jesus. But I don't walk around with the Bible and hit people in the head with it. But I'm a strong believer in religion, and I believe that we do have an afterlife. And I figured, well, when we're done here, we're going to see something else, and maybe I'll get to sit with all my brothers and sisters one day. But when you knew that you hit a ship, you knew there were men on it, and you knew that a lot of them were going to die. And I have to be honest, I used to really feel sorry and sad, knowing that these guys were just like I was, and it's over for them. A lot of guys would cheer and yell and clap. And I would just feel sorry, and I would more or less say a silent prayer, not knowing any of them, and very simple, you know, Lord, just take care of them. They're the enemy, but they're human beings, and I would console myself. that way.
What about moments where you thought, as you just said, hey, that could easily be me? What about the moments where you thought maybe it was about to be you, where your number was about to be called?
Well, like I said before, you're pretty busy. There's a lot of activity going on. If it happens, you're not going to be like these guys were on the old Squalus, if you remember that, when that sunk. You know, I think there was 28 guys that got into a compartment, they closed the hatch, and they survived.
Right.
But a lot of them lost their life.
Yeah.
And it was fast for them. I mean, you're not going to lay there and suffer. When it happens, it happens. It's done. The fear never entered my mind. I always figured someone's there watching for me.
When did you get on the Senate?
Latter part of 44, because I was just temporarily on the Sea Robin. And the reason I was on there, they needed a second-class electrician. They borrowed me.
Well, the only reason I ask those details is I'm just looking at some of the official history of the Senate. And, you know, the very first couple patrols here, you know, here's an instance where your sub is attacking a Japanese mine layer. Mm-hmm. And according to this account, two torpedoes were heard to explode, but while going deep, the Senate was rocked hard by two aircraft bombs, which exploded beneath her. The sub surfaced an hour later and saw the oil slick and the Japanese who had been on the ship that you guys sunk. But I'm thinking about those aircraft bombs exploding beneath your sub.
Mm-hmm.
And something like that get your attention a little bit?
Oh, it gets your attention, yeah. You know, you rock and you pitch and so forth, you know, and you hold on.
But no big deal, you're saying, for you?
I mean, not to a point where you panic.
Just another thing I stumbled across here not long after that. Well, I guess in April, there was a situation where you guys tried to save a P-51 pilot who had bailed out.
Yeah.
But were unable to find him.
Right.
Did you guys get called in on rescue opportunities like that a lot?
Yeah, we did. Most of the time, he couldn't find the guys.
That must have been tough.
Yeah, it is tough. I'd hate to see anybody lose their life, enemy or otherwise. That's just a feeling I have.
So you said most of the time, which does not mean the same as all the time, there were instances where you guys were able to pull out downed airmen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what happened to President Bush. He got shot down.
Exactly.
And thank God they were coming out to get him.
Yeah, that wasn't your sub, just
no.
So people aren't confused. But
yeah.
I guess what I'm interested in is what that's like on a sub when you guys are looking. And you know what it feels like to look for somebody and not find them, but then you actually do find the guy and you save his life.
Well, there's two things you got to look at. Number one, you're surfaced, you're looking for him.
Yeah.
But you're also looking for an enemy, too.
Uh-huh.
And you got to remember, we did not have the sophisticated electronics that they have today.
Right.
So, you know, you might be up on the surface and, you know, there's another guy that's underwater and he's got you in his sights and that could be it. Or aircraft, you don't know. But you try your best to try and find him. And after so long, if he's not around, you have to assume the fact that he's gone. And you feel bad about that. But you feel good about it when you do pick somebody up.
And I bet the guys you picked up felt really good. I bet you had some happy airmen coming aboard your sub.
Yeah, the pharmacist, well, of course, we called them pharmacist mate in those days. Today, they're called medics.
Yeah.
You know, they'd get him right into the sick bay and take care of him. I know we took out a tanker, and I know there was two cargo ships.
Just in about the last month of the war in the Sea of Japan, mm-hmm. You're talking about?
Yeah.
That was your sub's most, I guess, prolific patrol.
Yeah, and it was shortly after that was when I went to Salvage School. I thought I was going to go to Bayonne, New Jersey. That's where the dive school was, because I hadn't seen my grandparents in probably 10 years or better. And I figured, well, I'm going to be in New Jersey. Bayonne's not too far from Burlington, where I was born, you know?
Yeah.
New Jersey's not that big of a state to begin with. And when I opened up my orders, they said, okay, you got your wish. And I said, what's going on? They said, well, you put in for dive school. I said, okay. Well, back then, they didn't seal your orders. You can open up and look at it. And of all things, it was U.S. Navy dive school, Gatun Lake, Panama Canal Zone. Of course, that's civilians own it now, but that's where I went. And then I was assigned to the ship that was just about finished, which was the USS Recovery, ARS 43, Auxiliary Repair Salvage, built in Napa. And the crew, we were all living on a barracks because they were finishing it up. Ended up, I had appendicitis, and I'm in a hospital. And then 2 months later, I got transportation, and I joined them in Panama. And we were actually at the sub base, which was called Balboa.
How many times have you been through the Panama Canal?
73. The last time was a civilian. I took my wife and friends of mine from Fresno just before they took over the canal.
Uh-huh. Well, and just the decision to volunteer for dive school. Maybe people now say, oh, yeah, that's a neat adventure. But at the time, this is a pretty dangerous idea, and the technology was nothing like what we have now. Can you explain to us what you guys had to do to make one of these dives and what some of the risks and hazards were?
You know, first of all, there was no such thing in the Navy as scuba. They had shallow water mass, which was nothing more than a triangular mass. And for instance, if you're going to go below and clean the strainers off the bottom of the hull of a sub or something, and then they just hook it up to an air compressor. But your actual dive suit, it was a heavy rubberized, vulcanized dive suit. Your helmet was really heavy. It was spun copper.
Yeah.
And then you had your belt, you had your shoes and so forth. A lot of guys used to say, what are you going to do if you see a shark? Well, what can you do, you know?
And maybe if folks have seen the movie that Cuba Gooding Jr. made about Carl Brashear.
Yes.
Men of Honor?
Yes.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
That's the kind of equipment we're talking about, that you are at the same time training with this.
Yeah. Not the equipment when he was doing the test after he had his leg amputated. That was an upgrade. That may have been Hollywood. I've never seen that equipment. But the old hard hat was spun copper. I think once you were all decked out with the weights and everything, you were over 200 pounds just in the, probably about 260 pounds or so, depending on how much you put on.
Right. Really, really primitive.
Yeah. The dangers are not sharks or barracudas, unless you're bleeding. The dangers are when you're working below and you're working on a wreck or you're trying to bring something to the surface, is you got to be careful because, as you've seen in that movie, when he was going through dive school and they were on that old freighter and it started to slip off and the guy got pinned underneath. You know, there's a lot of danger when you're down there. Another danger is what happens? You step onto what they call a descending stage and they put you over the side. They bring you down to the depth of your helmet and you check everything out like a pilot does before he takes off. And then you're talking on a phone. The phone is speakers up in your helmet and there's a lot of air coming in, so it's hard to understand. And you tell them you're ready to descend and you step off the stage. And then you got handlers that handle the line. The cable, the telephone cable, that's also a lifeline cable. You got your air cables, and you're going down. Going down is not a problem. Then when you're on the bottom, you report you're on the bottom, and you do what you have to do. When you're coming up, depending on how deep you are, then you had to decompress, meaning you can only come up so far, and you have to stop. Because if you don't, you get the air bubbles, the nitrogen builds up in your blood vessels, and you end up what they call a bends, which could be fatal. That's why they have decompression chambers on these salvage ships. If you had the bends, they get you in there with a pharmacist mate. They seal it up, they close the hatch, and they actually turn on air pressure that brings you down to the pressure at the level you were below the water. And then they bring you up slowly. And then when you're watching your watch and you're talking topside, then you come up again, depending how deep you are. Now, that's all controlled by your air valve. I mean, these guys are not pulling you up. You're doing it.
Right.
They're just taking up the slack. You open it up too much, you get what's called spread eagle. That suit would spread out and your arms would go out. There is no way you're going to get your arms back down and you'll find your body is packed in the helmet like a sardine. That is a danger. Other than that, it's just dangers when you're working on whatever you're working on. You know, whether it's a sunken ship or whether you're going down after a torpedo or a bomb that didn't go off. So it is dangerous, but, you know.
Yeah, we're starting to get the idea that Mike is pretty modest about what he's done. It's break time again, but we'll hear more about his time as a salvage diver, including a remarkable small world connection. And we'll also hear why he's still working hard as an advocate for insurance policyholders at age 88. Check out how youthfully he wears those years in the photos at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends, and access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
If you're an RVer, you've probably heard about the new line of Grand Design fifth wheels, travel trailers, and toy haulers. What sets Grand Design apart is the long list of premium standard features you'll find on the entire line. You'll also find the largest selection of Grand Design RVs at Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states and online at rvcountry.com.